Hello and welcome to Dvorak Horowitz Unplugged, an hour-long discussion of activity in the financial markets around the world, featuring columnist John C. Dvorak and money manager Andrew Horowitz. This conversation is casual and unrehearsed. Let's join John and Andrew now.
I'm John C. Dvorak.
I'm Andrew the Shark Catcher Horowitz.
And this is 10/28/2014.
Yep.
As this is our last podcast for the month of October in 2014.
Yeah, exactly. Did I tell you about that shark that I had on the other day?
Yeah, you had a shark. You caught a you almost caught a shark, but it was a huge 8-footer.
It was like a good 8-footer, this thing. And I got to tell you something, the most annoying shark in the world. This wouldn't leave the boat. We're fishing and all that. And I got to tell you, if anybody has caught a shark.
Eating your catch.
Yeah, I kept eating my catch. It's true. And I just like to say that if anybody's ever caught a shark or had a shark on the line, they're very, very big. Very heavy.
We used to catch sharks when I was a kid in high school.
But what would you on a boat?
No. There was a couple of pilings on the old original Dumbarton Bridge train bridge that we'd walk out to. Mm-hmm. And there was always a bunch of number of sand sharks there. And we could catch them.
Yeah.
This guy was a friend of mine, was a goofball. And he used to like to, we'd get some big ones too. 8 foot, probably not. But we'd get some pretty decent ones, like 4 or 5 footers. Mm. And his idea of humor was to take the shark, throw it in the trunk, and then put a big rope in its mouth of some sort, and then tie it over a tree in front of one of the teachers' houses.
Oh. Wow. You know, the problem with the boat versus being on shore, if the shark comes up and you catch it and you bring him on shore, you can run like hell. You're on a boat.
Yeah, no, you're screwed if a shark comes on.
And this is a big shark. And all the sharks do, I've had sharks on the boat before, all they do is chomp, chomp, chomp when they're on the boat.
Yeah, they just bite at everything.
At everything. So, you know, fortunately, it bit through the steel cable, the leader, and it got off because I would have had no idea what to do with this thing.
Yeah.
Much less lift it. You got to use like a flying gaff to lift
this
thing.
You need a shotgun with some buckshot in it.
Exactly.
Or a big slug.
Yep.
And when you get the shark near the side of the boat, you pump him.
Yep.
Boom, until he's dead. Then you bring him on.
Yep. Well, there's a lot of things going on. The oil sharks are out also. Goldman Sachs on Monday slashed their price forecast. What timing, huh?
It's astonishing.
After it comes down 25% or so, they downgraded to about $75 per barrel in the time period of somewhere around, let's say, first quarter 2015.
Yeah, the problem with these guys is they've always been wrong about oil.
They're right in the end. You know, it's like, tomorrow we're going to say it's going to be $81. So, you know, finally they're right.
Well, they predicted 200, if you recall, a number of years ago, and that never happened.
Nope.
I guess 75, I can see this. The price should be 40.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, there's some crazy numbers going on right now. Somebody was talking about $10 a barrel yesterday. Dennis Gartman on CNBC.
Yeah, I wish.
Yeah, that's crazy. Talking about, you know what he's talking about? Why the reason for that was? This is great. Tell me you haven't heard this before. The new reality, nuclear fusion. Or fission, nuclear fission, fusion, whichever one he was talking about.
Fusion would be it.
Yeah, going to be, you know, how many times have we heard about this?
Let's see. I remember when I was a little kid.
Right? The new wave of the future, fusion. And there was a water fusion. Wasn't there something about water?
Coal fusion is the main thing, if you can never get that to work.
Yeah. So we saw that oil did come down pretty precipitously, and we saw it actually clip 80. I think it was about 79.60 or so on Monday. Yes. And then turned
sitting
around.
At 81.79 at the moment.
Yep, did turn around. A lot of news on the technology front. Apple has been experiencing declining music sales in the wake of free videos and cheap music, it seems. It seems that the Apple's iTunes, their sales have dropped about 14% across the globe since the beginning of this year.
Oh, I think that may be part of the they've seen this coming, of course. This is not a surprise. With all the streaming services, which seem to satisfy most people. And if you think about it, the streaming services are really the modern version of what used to be radio.
Yep.
And they bought Beats for that reason, because of Beats Music is a streaming service.
Right. And they shut down Beats.
Yeah.
Beats are shut down, and they're going to reestablish it something, iStream or something, whatever it's called.
Yeah.
You know, it's funny because
it's a little late to the party, by the way.
Yeah, a little. But it's interesting. When we were young and you had, you know, radio, you say you compare it to radio, the only way you can hear what you wanted to hear is you call the station, right? And you make a request.
Yeah.
And hopefully it gets played. I was always amazed that they would, when you would call, they would have the person on, and right after the person hung up, they'd have that song on. Not realizing when I was young that it was probably recorded the call, and they put the call on right after. Then again, when I was a very young child, I thought it was there was actually a band in the radio, so that's another story entirely.
Oh, I never believed that.
No? Yeah, it's possible. But now we're seeing that, of course, with the streaming radio, you can pretty much, to an extent, pick and choose your music, create your own stations. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, if you're really just, if your goal in life is to listen to pop music all day and all night, it's fantastic.
There's some, so, I mean, you can play a lot of different things on there. Broadway's on there. There's, you know, there's all sorts of things on there.
On those. Yeah. But
anyway.
Not a bad thing. And the whole iTunes thing is, but Apple came in with a bunch of other little, if you looked at the new annual report, there's a bunch of little kind of warnings in there.
Yeah. But and it's at an all-time high today.
Yeah, and I'm thinking, as we go to the end of the show, I'm thinking of today's the day to short.
Yeah, well, you'll be ahead of me because I'm down about 8% on that short on the game. Also, we saw that CVS and Rite Aid are disabling Apple Pay. It seems there's some snafus where people are being charged double, and there was some kind of problems with the Apple Pay platform, and whether it was Apple Pay or whether it was CVS and Rite Aid, and why it was two particular pharmacies, you know, slash convenience stores. I'm not sure if that has anything to do with each other. But this is out of the hundreds of different places. It's interesting. Have you seen how the whole Apple Pay works?
Well, I know how it works, but I've not seen it in action.
Yeah,
no.
I haven't seen it actually anybody really pay with it, but I saw up to the point. It's very cool. You just, you know, you take a picture of your credit card, it just sucks out the number and the information from it.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, that's never going to get hacked.
I got a little hacking story I'm going to talk to you about in a minute. I'll tell you about now. Today's what? It's Tuesday. So yesterday, I got credit cards in the mail out of nowhere. And I'm like, well, what are these? I got three or four credit cards. I opened them up. It turns out these were replacement credit cards for my business card with Chase.
Oh, that's interesting because I got a replacement for my bank. I got a replacement card for the same reason about 2 weeks ago.
Really? Well, my reason was I called them. I'm like, what's going on? Because now it wasn't only a replacement card, maybe for an expiration, but it was different numbers on there.
Yes.
It turns out it was, I called them up, I called Chase, I said, what's the story? Well, because of the Home Depot hack.
Right.
And breach.
That same thing with me.
Really?
Yeah.
That must have been a lot deeper than we know about.
Well, apparently, from the sounds of it, they don't really know how deep it was. And none of these credit cards, I think MasterCard in particular, wasn't going to take any chances. And so they required all their banks to reissue cards at their expense.
Now, what really sucks on this is that now I have to go and anything I have on automatic payment, I have to change.
Well, it doesn't suck if you've got stuff on automatic payment that you may have forgotten about or you shouldn't be on automatic payment. I mean, I think it's great to do a clean slate every once in a while. How much stuff do you have on automatic payment?
Maybe three or four or five things, maybe. But
eh.
Not a big deal, but I just got to go in.
Automatic payment, right. Folks.
You know, they'll contact me. They'll be, you were declined. But I did talk to Chase. He said it will be through the end of the month or through the end of the statement. They're still going to accept the other card, and then the other card leaves. So I have to deal with that. But I think that the interesting thing, like you said, is that it really there's a real question as to how deep this breach is and what the problems are because I've never seen this before with all the other breaches that have been happening. I don't even know. Did you use your card at Home Depot or was just because I don't know how much
they have. I mean, it's possible.
Yeah, over time. All right, let's see what else we have here.
Like cash, there it seems to me. And if you do the automatic, you know, the checkout thing, it's kind of.
Well, the last several times I've been to Home Depot, I don't even go to a checkout person. It's just, you know, they force you into the self checkout.
Yeah, this is I think it's a opportunity for petty larceny.
Oh. I know a guy, let's just say I know a guy, who went through the self-checkout. He checked everything out, gets to his car and realized there was a bunch of stuff on the bottom that he didn't check out.
Mm-hmm.
He told me about this.
Stuff like that.
Yeah, and that wasn't on purpose. You know, so a lot of that must be, I mean, there could be a lot of things going, passing by because, you know, they're sitting there on their phones and looking at their nails and all that other stuff over at the self-checkout. Not much for those self-checkout people to do.
No, and they're not that conscientious.
Yeah, exactly.
And if they look at you, they figure, you guy looks honest.
Yeah.
I mean, I know I've gone through the one. There's one at a Lucky store that I use when I'm trying to get in and out of the place. I only go there for emergencies. And I probably have, I didn't do anything on purpose, but I remember there was one time I was trying to buy some potatoes, and they didn't have, I couldn't see it on the menu anywhere, so I just clicked on any other potato, and off I went. I didn't have time to fool around.
What is a Lucky's? It sounds like a place you get cigarettes and rubbers.
Yeah, Lucky's used to be one of the big, big chains in California, Lucky Foods, and they disappeared off the face of the map, bought by Albertsons, and then Albertsons rebranded with the name Lucky's.
So now this back to being called Lucky's?
Yeah, same logo and everything from like the 50s.
Oh, God. Well, we had some earnings come out, a lot of earnings, matter of fact. We had, of course, the Apple earnings we saw last week. Twitter came out with earnings, and they came in pretty much on the mark in terms of expectations of EPS and revenue. There was some question about their monthly active user growth. I saw that it really slowed down pretty significantly. Now, the thing that really troubled me about this whole thing was not the idea that, okay, well, a little bit of slowdown, or maybe they, you know, could have earned a little bit more and, you know, kind of looking for some better growth. But when the CEO came on and talked about changing the metric of what people should be looking at versus the monthly active users to this whole thing about logged off users, because if you're logged off, you still could be looking at it and we don't count you as a monthly active. And so, you know, just a random user who may or may not be in. Did you follow any of this that he was talking about?
No, I didn't at all. And it sounds like it's nuts.
Yeah, it's crazy. And this is not the first time he's changed the metric on what really should be the thing and what he's telling analysts to look at and track. So I was trying to listen to what he was talking about. There was an interview with him, and I was, you know, and even the people that were interviewing saying, are you kidding? I mean, first of all, what does that even mean to track somebody who's logged off? That's troubling on its own. But the other thing is that, you know, the whole idea that you're changing this so now you can pump your numbers up because you're saying that if they're logged off, you're still getting the possible advertisements. Now you're going through, you know, a whole different model of being able to understand what users are doing. Or on the other hand, does it even matter how many monthly active users you have if you're just counting the whole logged off thing? And if you count all the logged off, does it mean they have to hit the site? I mean, it's just a whole mess. So the street didn't take it too well. The stock was down about 10% after that. Now,
interesting.
Now, Facebook, yeah. Facebook, we actually hit the short right before the earnings came out and closed it at about a 10% gain on that, actually, for our portfolios. And we're short, actually, in the game that we play here. We've been short from 52.50 or something like that on that. So that's doing well. Now, Facebook came out with earnings this evening. They beat on EPS and earnings as well. And things were looking oh so reasonably good. Although, again, you see that their growth is slowing. But here's the thing. When a company reaches maturity or at least a point of saturation, there's just no way that they continue growing at the clip that they did when they first started. That's obvious. You know, back in the day when Dell was growing and they were growing at some ridiculous number.
Yeah.
You know, if you kept on doing that level for a number of years, everybody would have to have like 15 Dells on their desktop. It was ridiculous. So the same thing with Facebook. There's only so many users you can have. And when you have, you know, a billion users, let's say, well, a 10% increase is a lot versus when you start out with 500 million users or whatever the number is. So things were going okay, just fine with the stock. It was up, it was down a little bit on the numbers. And, you know, there was a look at this whole on their metrics, which I attached here, we could talk about. But then the stock started slipping as Zuckerberg started talking about a couple different things, and one of them being a very difficult fourth quarter coming up, as well as a significant increase in expenses going into 2015.
What would that be?
I have no idea. What could be the expenses? Let's see. Maybe there was an increase in internet pricing. Maybe bandwidth.
That'll be the day.
That can't be the case. His salary. Maybe. What could be expenses? Good question.
It's been baffling me. I heard this too, and it's just like, what increase in expenses are we talking about here?
I mean, the only thing it could be is possibly putting more people on.
That we don't know about that's going up, a bubble payment, balloon payment. is they're going to move to new headquarters. They're going to buy the city of San Francisco. I mean, what could it be?
I mean, it could be human capital. It could be bringing on a lot more people, hiring a lot more people, more programmers. You
know, what?
I have no idea. I'm just telling you what the possibilities are.
And then maybe to make a push someplace else, India or China. I don't know.
Ah,
maybe,
how about the drones? And how about the
Facebook?
Yeah, Facebook has all those drones. Remember, they bought a drone company, or they have involvement with drones, where they're trying to make internet available everywhere, and they're flying these internet Wi-Fi kind of drone things overhead, so that people in, you know, Zimbabwe can have Facebook, because that's important. Everybody has to have Facebook. Everybody has to have Facebook. Who are you if you don't have Facebook? I mean, you're not a developed country ever going to get out of the problems that you have if you don't have Facebook, I guess. And then they have also this Oculus, which is their that hideous-looking thing you put on your head to do gaming.
Yeah.
So maybe they're doing something there.
I don't know.
So here's what happened.
Yeah, I wish they'd be more explanatory in these announcements.
Yeah, well, I'm sure there's something buried that we'll find out sooner or later. The thing that you look at here is the mobile active users went from last year, quarter three, 874 million to 1.1 billion. Ad revenue has gone from 1.7 billion to 2.9 billion, a nice increase, about a 10% increase on a quarter over quarter basis. And on a year over year basis, 65%. I mean, significant increases in revenue there. Here's one of the things. I mean, again, you have to put this in perspective when you look at this from the idea of how big they are. The year-over-year increase in daily active users is only up 18.6%. Quarter-over-quarter up 4.2%. The active users, the mobile daily active users, on a year-over-year basis of 38%, quarter-over-quarter 7%, and monthly active users is up 13% on a year-over-year basis. So if you look back, and I showed you that historically, you'll see that obviously the active users non-mobile have been slowing down significantly, but in terms of growth.
Yeah.
And your mobile users have been increasing significantly, and that's what the big push to get advertising into the mobile applications was all about. I don't really use the mobile application. Between Twitter and Facebook, those ads are just nuisances to me, and I don't personally click on anything. I don't know how many people out there actually click, but maybe you don't click. Maybe it's all about just having a commercial.
I don't know.
On there.
It's baffling to me. I don't like them either.
Yeah. So that's going on with Facebook. Now, Facebook dropped, I think it was about 8 or 9% after the news came out about the expenses. So we're seeing another earnings situation here. You know, we're seeing a lot of excitement right now. The markets are back into the groove of just buying. The markets are up about 1.2%, give or take, on the S&P 500 today. The small caps are up about 2.8%. And all of this on very poor durable goods orders, some negative new home sales, and really nothing that I could say and I could point out that was great in terms of earnings. But the big news is that, of course, the Fed is meeting over the next 2 days, Tuesday and Wednesday. And Wednesday, tomorrow, they're going to come out with their announcement on what's going to happen with their bond purchases. Supposedly, going to end the bond purchase program of new money in, the $15 billion per month. And by the way,
we'll see.
Well, no matter what they do, even if they end that, let's say they end it, okay? That's done. It's not over. It never ends, by the way. Because they have $4 trillion of bonds. And they're committed to reinvesting the principal and interest that those bonds put off.
Yeah, that would be a lot of money.
Yeah, we're talking about another $10 billion a month, easy. That they're going to be buying anyway. And that's infinitum.
Until they dump it.
And they're not going to dump it. They're talking about just letting it just roll off eventually. So until those bonds actually
fire.
You got 10 or 15 years of this crap.
Yeah, interesting.
Yep. And this is something from the You Won't Believe It area. IBM announced today another $5 billion buyback.
Yeah, I got a kick out of that. These guys never give up.
Never give up.
They got the most creative bookkeepers there are.
Yep. And you know what's interesting? Today,
how's that stock looking?
It's about...
I think I shorted it.
Yeah, if crazy as it sounds, you're negative on your short.
It's crazy.
Yep, just by a little bit. It's at 162 or something like that. But what's interesting about this, that didn't get any legs on this buyback, that's first of all. Second of all, there's been a lot of hubbubaloo that have been you've been seeing about this whole buyback situation. Finally, the media is taking a notice and saying to companies in interviews, hey, you know what? By the way, I see your earnings. I see that you beat. I see that you're growing your earnings. But you know how much of that really was buybacks and where you're actually making money other than the fact that you're doing all these buybacks? AutoNation today had a great quarter. Great quarter. They bought back 8% of the company's shares this year. That's enormous.
Yeah, no kidding.
It's like everybody's going private. And this is why volume is low. This is not that many shares out there anymore. Right? I mean, this is why you have lower volume. Earnings quality is it stinks because the quality of the earnings is not based on anything more than financial engineering. Revenues, even though companies, and again, this is very interesting because companies can actually manipulate their earnings to beat analyst expectations by doing more or less, or you know, whatever the numbers, but more stock buybacks that they have already authorized. So when heading into the end of the quarter when they're going to announce their earnings, they could just be doing a whole bunch of stock buybacks so that they can, in fact, have a good number.
Have great phony numbers.
Yeah. So a lot of that's going on right now, and all of a sudden there's a bit of a realization of what's going on, and some of the media starting to pick up on it, and that will kind of spread a little bit because before this it was masked. You know, the headline numbers and the earnings numbers, most investors, unless you're a, you know, a top analyst, aren't going to look at this stuff. Just going to look at the number.
All right, if you're doing this trick, and generally speaking, if we watch IBM, they're doing it high. Well, probably in more ways than one, but they're buying high, yeah. Not buying low. I mean, a classic stock buyback thing is when you have a depressed market, and the stock is in the tank, and the company buys as much stock as it can cheap.
Right.
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 And they don't buy it when the stock is skyrocketed and you start buying the stock at the top. So if something bad happens and we have a turn down that sticks around for a while, you just lose all that money for your shareholders.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. And it's a double whammy because now you have all this treasury stock that you own and now you're going to start, you know, possibly doing an offering because you need more money for some reason. And even if you don't do an offering, the fact is now you are much more, you're open to the problems associated with a stock goes down because you own more of the company.
Yeah.
Yeah, the whole thing is really problematic.
It sounds to me like a disaster waiting to happen for IBM.
It's happening already. I mean, they missed their earnings. Meanwhile, the stock is steady at this 162. But like you said, you know, looking at when they buy their stocks, I mean, the stock has been in this range of 160-something to 190 for how long? And they keep on buying it back at that within that range, obviously. Maybe they're just waiting for the day to finally, you know, when the numbers are so compelling. Listen, if in fact revenues pick up, this is really good for companies.
Yes, but we see no evidence that IBM has that capability.
Right.
Where are revenues going to pick up? Is there some new planet that they're going to populate and maybe sell goods there? I don't see it.
No, and not only that, they've gotten rid of a lot of the different components of their companies. I mean, they've been selling off parts of the company for a long time. So therefore, they can't have better revenue. And as a matter of fact, I think that IBM had some kind of a number they put on, something like $20 a share, something like that, that they committed to a couple of years back that they were going to earn in 2015, and they recently abandoned that number after years of having that number. So IBM, we've talked about this. They're just, you know, they're a shell of a company, terrible management, and, you know, the only thing they have going for them is that so far they can continue to trick investors to believing that their earnings are keeping pace because of all this. So the competition is heating up.
I think it's going to be a short of a lifetime.
Yeah,
when it finally
I would agree.
Comes to, yeah.
I would agree.
And when it starts to fall, it's just going to keep going. I mean, I think a lot of people like myself, amateur hour type of investor, you know, you say, oh, I'm looking at this as 160, 171, and then it collapses and it goes down to like 90. Mm-hmm. Ah, I missed it. You probably didn't miss it. It's probably going to go down to 20.
Yeah, it's possible. I mean, I don't see what IBM really has to offer here, especially, again, with all the competition and with all the things that are going on. Look, We've seen that pricing is coming down across the board. Just this week, Microsoft now announced unlimited storage with their Office 365 product. So, you know, all the companies that are in the business of storage that have been, I bought a 16 gigabyte smart card. I think it was $8.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Yeah, about right. Do you remember in 1988, 89?
1988.
Just bear with me for a second here, okay? I bought memory for a computer. It cost me $50 a meg. I bought 4 megs. I was like king of the hill.
Yeah, you were cooking.
Yeah, $200 on 4 megs. That sounds ridiculous when you buy 16 gigs right now for $8. But, you know, the 16 gigs was only recently really came down this much. I mean, it was much more money for a long time.
Yeah, well, it's been coming down pretty steady. If I want to do throwback numbers, I remember in the early 80s, when the first hard disks came out, you have 5 megabyte hard disk.
Mm-hmm.
That was like $1,200 for 5 megabytes.
It sounds so ridiculous.
And boy, was it fast.
Yeah, well, you didn't have to put floppy in, floppy out, floppy in, floppy out. Remember those days?
Well, there was that. And then there was, if you want to go earlier, you got the cassette deck.
Yeah. I never understood how those big 5.5-inch floppies, when I looked at them in the back of the day, I'm like, how are these ever going to hold up over time?
The 5.5-inch or the 8-inch?
Well, there was the 5.5 and the 3. But the
there was an 8 before that.
Oh. But the 5.5, and it was covered with like a thin piece of cardboard. It was like a piece of paper, a thick piece of paper that was covering the disc. And it was always like, how is it spinning, first of all? How is it writing to it, second of all? And how is it ever going to stand up if I need to move it?
I still have a bunch of those discs, and 95% of them still work.
Well, you have a machine that spins them?
I have an old machine that has a bunch of different screwball drives on it, and I boot that thing up when I need to get to one of these things. Yes.
Why would you need to get to one of those things? Why didn't you transfer them somewhere?
No, I did most of the time. Here's what happens. So I go into my Fibber McGee closet, which has all my old gear in it, and I'm digging around throwing stuff out, usually, where my daughter is when she comes over here to throw stuff out. And then all of a sudden, holy crap, what is this box of classic old discs with some of my stuff on it? Now what do I do?
Yep.
I keep running into it, so I have to keep the stuff, you know, around.
Yeah, I've always had this fear that different media would go out of, it would just go out of a style or just not.
I've had more trouble with old CD-ROMs.
Oh, really?
Than I had with old floppies. The old CD-ROMs crap out left and right. I just got tons of them. They're just not readable anymore.
Yeah.
They all got rot or whatever. Hmm. And you have to get those things moved up to newer things. I think most of my stuff now is I've kind of given up and everything's on these 4 and 5 and 6 terabyte hard drives you can buy at Costco for $100.
Yeah, that still scares me. You know, one day I had a drive that had all my backups. It just stopped spinning. Like I plugged
it in. You always have to have double.
Yeah.
Two.
Right. Exactly.
And not from the same batch.
Yep. Well, there's a lot of things happening on a governmental and on a concerning basis. We have that the U.S. is now increasing security government buildings in Washington and other cities because of continuing terrorist threats and last week's attack on the Canadian Parliament. So we have a rise in the terror rating, I guess it is right now.
Yeah, some maniac in Canada shoots up the place and then everyone freaks out.
Markets really got really rocked on that whole thing because when the news broke, there was you know, all this shooting that was happening at the Canadian Parliament. Plus, there was something else that they reported, that there was another monument or some other place. There was another shooting. There was like 3 different things, and it looked like this, just for the moment, it looked like this planned attack. And then we all know, it was one maniac that was... then we had that another school shooting. A freshman in high school goes in and just shoots up the place.
Yeah, we covered that on the No Agenda show. It turns out to be a love triangle.
Oh, was that what it was?
Yeah.
Oh, boy. Yeah, terrible. And then tonight, right after the close, or right soon after the close, an unmanned NASA rocket, which is called the Antares.
Antares. Who makes that thing?
It was a company called Orbital Sciences, symbol ORB.
Oh, okay.
And their stock also erupted in a fireball after this happened.
That would be right.
Yeah, okay. Now, this was a mission to resupply the International Space Station.
Yes, with 2 tons of stuff.
Now, these poor fellas up there and gals. Well,
the Russians just sent something up to me about a few hours later.
Oh, really? So they're cooperating with us now?
Well, the space station, they are.
That's neutral territory.
Kind of.
Yeah, so.
It's like the the no-fly zone or something. What is that thing they used to call in the Star Trek where they had this neutral zone?
Oh, the neutral zone, yeah, with the Romulans.
Yeah, or the Klingons or whichever.
Yeah, yeah. Who is worse, the Romulans or the Klingons?
Yeah, it's all a story.
You know what I love about Star Wars and Star Trek? You have essentially all human bodies with different heads on them. Remember, that was definitely with Star Trek.
Yes.
Every different species was a human body. Maybe he had like a webbed hand or something.
Well, actually, they did do later in the series when they had the Ferengis. They were all short little midgets.
Oh, yeah, and they liked their ears to be rubbed.
And they had big ears.
To get to a Ferengi, you would, and they had bad teeth, and they were all conniving.
Yes, yeah.
And a lot of people in certain religions thought they were picking fun at them.
You know, Orbital Sciences.
Yeah, ORB.
Yeah, it was as high as 30. It was way down at 10 just in 2012.
And it's down, down 15% after hours.
Yeah, I see that. Yeah, now it's down to 2565.
Mm-hmm.
So, it's a good drop.
Yep.
It might be a good one to pick up.
I would think that there's an opportunity there because, they'll come out with some hubbubaloo that it was a one-time thing. And they've actually had other rockets that have gone up before that have been successful, and this happens here and there. So I would say I agree with you. Wait for a big drop, maybe, or pick it up, tomorrow. But you may see some further downslide. But then there'll be realization that, hey, you know what? The rocket was paid for. It's not like you get a refund from the company, And the fact is, they probably have some kind of a continuing contract with the government also. And there's probably small print. If your rocket explodes, we are not to be held harmless and blah, 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 blah. And, the contract still stands. So, I don't know.
According to one publication, it was this catastrophic anomaly. There's a good one.
Yeah. These anomalies. So, we also had in news of governments, we saw that the Brazilian market, over the weekend, finally, I think it's finally at least, the election is completed in Brazil, and we had a lot of speculation that there would be a new president in. The old president nobody liked. It was bad for the economy. There's just a whole bunch of things that were done over the years that was really very harmful for the economy, self-serving for the government and the cohorts that are in government. And so the markets were running up into the idea that, hey, maybe this president will be overthrown and this new president will come in and be really great for the economy and all that. And magically, over the weekend, Rousseff wins. The old president is now reelected.
Yeah.
Markets were not happy in Brazil. Now, one of the stocks...
She's not been that bad for the economy in Brazil. I don't know what they're looking for.
They're not happy there. But I'll tell you, a lot of the Brazilian stock market is based on a few stocks. So, for example, you look at the EWZ, which is the Brazilian ETF. Okay? It's very interesting. So, if you look at EWZ and you look at the holdings of it, a disproportional amount of the holdings inside of that is actually, let me see what it is here. Is there holdings on here? Let's see. Financials. Let's see. I don't think it's here. It is Petrobras and a couple of like Vale and a few others. Okay.
Yeah, you might as well just invest in Petrobras.
Right. Now look at the stock. Look at this. PBR. Yeah. Look at PBR. There's a couple of different ones. There's the A. There's the other one. Take a look at this for a second.
Hold on. Well, it's Petrobras.
Yeah. This stock has gone from 50. Back in about five, in 2009, which you would say is kind of the low point, right? To 11 and a half.
Huh.
This is government owned. And here's the problem with this. The problem is that the government sucks all the money out of this company. They don't give a crap about the investors as far as I can see it, because what's the difference, right? they can raise or lower the pricing of fuel and all. This stock was always doomed. Always doomed.
That's classic Brazilian.
Yeah, and the stock, if you look, just over the last, let's call it 5 days.
One time it was 70.
Oh, how far back
is that? 2008.
Yeah, this was a darling for a little while.
This would be the time not to buy to 70. It actually ramped up. If you go way back to 2002 or so, it's floating around $2.60, and then skyrockets to 70.
Mm-hmm.
And then it collapses with the rest of the world.
Well, that was also oil prices back then were really, you know, going to 200.
In 2008?
Yeah.
And then it collapses in November to 20 from 70. And then it rebounds to 51 bucks in November 2009. And then from there, it's just a steady decline down to, so it's 2009 when I think she got in about then. So she's the one.
Yeah, I mean, really, if you look at it, first of all, they are drilling in Brazil, where they drill is some of the most expensive drilling facilities because they have to go very far offshore. It's not like a quick jump to get to their rigs. And the Brazilian oil is very expensive. They also did a deal, I think it was with China in 2009 or so, where they sold a ton of oil at a cap price of $30 a barrel. That probably wasn't good for them.
No, that couldn't be good for the profits.
But
especially
on top of that,
oil's expensive to pull.
But on top of that, it's pretty much governmental owned. It's only 7% institutional owned because the rest of it's owned by governments, the government. So, you know, you have any stock that's owned by a government. The problem is that they can just take out all the money.
Yeah, they're stealing the money from the company.
Exactly.
To cover their asses.
Never a good idea. I should have shorted this a long time ago. I knew this a long time ago. I just never really hit this thing. It was just never, you know.
It's probably still a good short.
Yeah, it could be. But if you look at it, it was down about, the EWZ ETF holds a disproportionate amount of Petrobras. So if you see that Petrobras is down 10%, Brazilian stock market will be down close to 3 or 4% potentially.
Huh.
So it's very interrelated. Very big problem. So this dropped about, I think the Brazilian market dropped about like 7% or 8% on Monday after the news came out. Rebounded a bit, about 4% today, with everybody saying, Jim Chanos, actually a very well-known short seller, came out and said, you know what? All of the problems with Brazil are probably priced in at this point, so he's covering his shorts. So that also helped to push this up a bit today. So, yep. Now, home ownership in the United States, this is, I think, fascinating. I bet you won't believe this. But home ownership, like individual home ownership in the United States, fell to a 20-year low in the third quarter.
It doesn't surprise me.
Why?
Well, because the millennials coming up, they're all a bunch of cheap guys that are, you know, living the life of Pabst Blue Ribbon.
Oh, don't say
and
it.
And they have been all sold a bill of goods on renting. And that's when you saw this coming about a year and a half ago when Warren Buffett came out and said, the best investment nowadays is in apartment rental buildings.
Right.
And he went all in.
Yep.
And that indicates that there's a societal thing going on where they don't get they don't do the kind of math. When I was a kid, we used to actually be taught to balance checkbooks, and we were taught how to calculate interest rates on mortgages, literally, and all this sort of thing. And anyone who looks at the numbers knows it's crazy to rent unless you're a vagabond.
There are times when it makes more sense to rent.
There are times, I agree.
But it's not now.
No.
Right.
Now is the time to buy like crazy.
Yeah, I mean, housing prices have gone up to a point that it makes it a bit of a slant, and it's not as, I think it's maybe 3 or 4 years to break even from buying versus renting. So if you're only going to stay somewhere only a couple of years, it does make more sense to rent. And maybe that's where their heads are at when it comes to, you know, maybe I'll move my job, maybe I'll kind of, you know, live in New York for a little while, Brooklyn, maybe I'll move over to San Francisco for a while, then I'll come down to Florida, maybe then I'll go to Texas.
Yeah.
So if they're doing that, it makes more sense to rent, obviously.
And there are some people doing that.
Right.
But not the majority.
Yeah. So if you're looking to, you know, create some stakes and you know, kind of create a family and stay in a place for a period of time, especially because rates are the lowest they've been, I think, ever at this point. And what's the 30-year mortgage right now?
I don't know. It's under
3%. 3.9?
4 max.
The average 30-year fixed rate. Let's see what that is right now. Let's see. Today's quick rates, 30-year mortgage rates. Oh, we'll go to Quicken Loans. We'll see what they have. But, you know, this is a time when it's so inexpensive. I mean, I remember when there was times when mortgages were, you know, 15% interest. Oh, I hate when they make you do this
were
kind of stuff.
Still jamming the place. No, it's crazy. I think it's the craziest thing I've ever seen. But it's a good sign for people into real estate because this is just a pent-up demand that is creating itself. Because at some point, these people are going to get a clue.
You think so?
You know, they have to if you've ever lived in an apartment.
Well, yeah, of course. And then you have
it's miserable. I mean, the landlord never does what they're supposed to do. It's not a cheap proposition. You're just throwing money away. You might have a neighbor who's nuts and he's pounding on the walls all night, or somebody having sex next door constantly.
I mean,
there's a million reasons not to live. They're not private.
Pets. Yeah.
I can go on and on.
Yeah. I hear that.
I mean, I lived in an apartment when I was in college, and that was the end of it.
I can't get any. What is this? You can't get. Here's the Freddie Mac service. I can't get any of these websites that come up.
Yeah, probably being attacked as we speak.
It's ridiculous. I mean, they really, I can't get any of these to come up. Hmm. Yeah, Mortgage Daily News. Okay, it is, let's see, this looks up to date. The 30-year fixed is October 17th, 3.9.
Yeah, there you go, 4.
Yeah, so that's pretty low.
And they're available. I mean, we took some money recently, and we could get it. I couldn't say that 2 years ago. So I think they're loosening it up a little bit.
Yep.
But. But no, you're right. And it doesn't surprise me because I've just kind of see this coming.
Mm-hmm. Now, what's interesting, today there was a couple of things that were announced. There's some durable goods came out and they were lower than expected. But I was shocked, absolutely just against the chair, shocked with consumer confidence was at 94 in October, up from like 87. 94, we had a market rout in October, right? We have Ebola in October, and consumer confidence goes
and
up.
And ISIS.
Yeah, I mean, what's ISIL, ISIS, whatever it is. But I don't get it. I don't understand how consumers are all excited. The only thing could be maybe that they're like, oh my God, look at all these problems, but gas prices are low, I guess. I mean, you know, we may die from Ebola.
Gas prices, that makes people feel good.
Yeah, so maybe that's what's going on here with gas prices going down. You know, I saw it today at $2.99 right by me, and you're probably like $3.20, right?
Yeah. About 320.
So I guess that makes people happy, I suppose. You know,
the iPhone 6.
Ah, that's what it is. The oversized iPhone 6. I still haven't gotten mine. I'm still not sure. So listen, I was very impressed with the New York, New Jersey decision to do mandatory quarantine of people that were in any of the hot zones and came back to the United States. I said, you know, finally somebody's thinking, why not have a mandatory quarantine for a period of time for these people that were over there? I don't know why they'd be worried about it, because maybe they're working in the field and they realize, hey, you know what, this is a pretty significant situation with Ebola, and if we come back, you know what we'll do is we'll come back on a plane full of people, but then we'll be quarantined.
Yeah.
But anyway, what's interesting is that this whole idea that you're only contagious if you have a fever, I'm not sure if that's 1 degree, a half a degree, 2 degrees.
It's unclear.
Very unclear. So now this nurse that was forced to do a quarantine in New York is absolutely freaking out and threatening to sue.
Yeah, she should. She got her locked up in a tent.
What?
Armed guards.
So what's the problem? You don't think that's right?
No, I don't think it's right. I think they should have the old fashioned house quarantine. You're in your house, and there's a sign on the door, quarantine, and nobody can go in or out except, you know, somebody maybe to bring you food or through the door or who knows how. And you're in at home, at least. You can watch the football game, baseball game.
Well, what if they brought a TV to you? No good? What if they gave you?
No, it's not the same. You got, you know, there's apparently she's got no place to crap. It's like, I've seen a picture of this thing. It's ridiculous. There's no reason for it.
Mm.
It's uncalled for.
Mm. So not self-quarantine, but mandatory quarantine at home.
Yeah.
So you're in for
put
the
bracelet on you and lock your house and put a sign on the house so nobody can come and go and can't go in and that sort of thing. You know, that's the way, as far as I know, I think in the 20s and 30s where there was TB and other diseases, they would do it that way. I don't see why they have to put her in a tent.
Hmm. Okay, I could go along with that actually, but go along with it with the fact that there'll be some kind of a mandatory time period that they are under watch and not able to go out if they have clearly any indication, but if they've been in the area for whatever it is. I think it's 20 days or something like that. 21 days. Yeah. So we had some good news, by the way, although the good news, I guess, it seems that Ebola is now eradicated. You know, three days.
Gee, it was going to be a million people with it, but now nobody.
Nobody. Okay. Sunday night, there was news that a doctor in New York came down with a fever, and it turns out he had Ebola. And right before that, he was in Brooklyn at a bowling alley. Now, if I could think of a place that I probably would be nervous about going to after somebody was diagnosed with Ebola that was there, is a bowling alley. They got their fingers in the bowl. You know, they're sweating, they're doing, they're, you know, drinking, they're touching. And, you know, I would think that's I'd bring my own ball. You have your own bowling ball?
Yeah, I got a number of them. I used to be a bowler.
Hmm. What was your average?
When I was good, it was about 203.
Nice. You bowled 300?
No, it's always been one of my... I threw 14 strikes in a row once, but it was over two games. It was one of my biggest disappointments, not throwing a 300 game.
Hmm. Well, one day, you never know.
No, I don't bowl anymore.
Not going to happen. Well, and bowling alleys are not like they used to be. Now they got the lights, they got the music. But you know what? I got to tell you something. You got to admit one thing about a bowling alley. They have the best French fries ever anywhere.
I don't know about that.
Oh, okay. Bowling alley French fries are the best. I don't know what they do there. Maybe it's they don't change the oil. Maybe. I don't know. I've been to several bowling alleys in several states, and they're always this. They have the same recipe. Little known.
Well, now that you mentioned, I do remember eating French fries in a bowling alley, and you might be right.
Yeah, they're like the steak fries that are really crisp. Anyway, the news out of Europe this week. Well, let me just finish this point. So, with Ebola, so this doctor comes down with Ebola on Sunday night. The futures, you know, get banged up pretty good. Monday, markets still futures are ugly. By the time the market opens, they're starting to move back up. And I think the market may have closed positive on Monday. Like, nobody cared. You know, futures were all worried and all pissed off and all that, and then the market opens. There's just money being poured into it anyway.
Huh.
So, yeah, that was Monday. One of the big things over the weekend also was that the European stress tests were announced, all the different winners and losers. And on Thursday, prior to that, there was a little bit of a leak.
I thought that was going to collapse the euro.
Well, it didn't do anything. It's actually kind of very stable right now since then.
I noticed.
25 out of the 150 banks, there was a note, 25 banks would fail. Well, markets were a little bit skittish right at that moment. There was a leak. And right after that, just Johnny on the spot, Mario Draghi comes out and says, don't believe the rumors. You know, we have many tools available, many unconventional tools available.
Unconventional, he said that?
Yeah.
That's not good.
This is after he said, 2 or 3 weeks ago, that the only tools that he has left is asset purchases. And people were pissed off because he said, we only have this one thing left. Now he comes up and he says, we have many unconventional tools that we can still use.
Yeah, cooking the books would be one of them.
Yeah. Now what's interesting was that the stress test came out, and you want to guess how many banks failed?
Wasn't like
25.
25. Yeah, 25.
You exactly said the number that was leaked.
Oh, that's funny. Well, yeah, that's because it was the real number.
Right. And what was interesting was that nobody in France, none of them in Germany, it was Italy primarily, the Monte Paschi, all the companies that we knew were problematic. Now, what was really interesting was that in the prior two stress tests, there were no failures. And then we know that there was big problems in Portugal and in Italy. So obviously we knew at the time they were bogus, by the way. But nobody cared. They bought the stocks of the companies anyway, and they pushed down the euro, and they pushed down the bonds and all this good stuff. Well, this time, the ECB was committed to doing a much more stringent and much more believable stress test. So what did they get? 25 banks that fail. Now, one of the problems was that in the calculations that they use on the stress test, they use a very high unemployment rate, which they have currently. They use all sorts of other things that would really stress out a bank, okay? They use high inflation. They use all these terrible things. One of the things they didn't do, and what's causing all the problems in the banks now, is deflation. There was no deflation calculation in the stress tests. So all the things that are currently causing all the problems, inclusive of high unemployment, lending issues, real estate issues, and deflation, they didn't use that one component, which is deflation, which is a major problem.
So I didn't know this. That's interesting.
I don't know how believable this crap is again. I personally, I told you this before, and I'll tell you again, I don't believe Mario Draghi as far as I could throw him.
Yeah.
So I don't think that any of this is actually realistic. So banks got cracked pretty good. As a matter of fact, even the banks that did pass got hurt on Monday, and everybody was kind of surprised. And of course, they bounced back today. But some of the banks, Banco Santander and Commerce Bank, a couple others, were hurt pretty badly, the ones that failed. But, the other ones, again, had a pretty bad day in Europe, had a bad day on Monday, but today was Tuesday. So there you go. The big thing is there's a big policy meeting coming up today and tomorrow, and we're going to culminate with an announcement that we'll then have the Fed chair, Janet Yellen, who I believe has an earpiece in that tells her every word that is affecting markets. And if she says something that affects markets negatively, she turns it around to see what she can do to affect it positively. And that's how they play the game. Makes sense to me.
Yeah, it's possible.
And, speaking about those earpieces, I have a question. Those TV shows that they have the earpieces in and they talk to each other and however they do it technology-wise, which doesn't make any sense either. And they go into a situation where they're undercover and, they're talking and, the other people that they're staking out, that they're with close to, in proximity to, they don't want to know that they have these earpieces. Meanwhile, these earpieces are like sticking out of their ears. You know what I'm talking about?
Well, there are kinds that go into the ear. I think they're called earwigs or something. They're special for...
Those are bugs.
They're used for spies.
Anyway, I was looking at a show the other day. I'm like, man, that's pretty apparent that you have something in your ear. How come nobody else notices? Yeah,
they're always tapping it. It doesn't look suspicious at all.
They tap it and they can talk to anybody with a tap.
Right. They direct somehow.
Somehow it's directly linked to the other.
I think they should be wearing Google Glass and that would be funny.
And the other thing they do is they clone the other person's phone.
That's persons of interest made of... That's one of their plot gimmicks.
Yeah.
And they can do it from a distance. Phone clone.
Right. I love that. That's a great show. I like the show.
Oh, no. It's the best.
Yeah. And finally, just to kind of wrap this up a little bit, Federal Trade Commission is suing AT&T today for deceptive and unfair data throttling. The complaint alleges that the mobile service provider charged millions of customers for unlimited data plans while cutting data speeds, sometimes by nearly 90%. And the practice of slowing down speeds to nearly impractical levels after the user has crossed a user's threshold is called data throttling. Nothing new here, right?
No, nothing new at all, actually. It's been going on forever.
I told you, there's an area in my neighborhood that there's just no service.
It's probably some guys just hogging all the bandwidth.
Maybe. You can't even get telephone service. I had to buy that unit. Stupid. Anyway, let's get to the stocks, why don't we?
All right.
So, we're coming up on the end of the month. And interestingly enough, October is about to be or is right now positive for the S&P 500 after all of that.
After all the rigmarole.
After a 460-point drop intraday for the Dow 2 weeks ago. It's back to being positive. But this is a game we play. It's our weekly stock picks. And you can find out more about this over at dhunplugged.com. You can see all the different stocks that we have on the list. Right there, the little icon on the side says Weekly Stock Picks. And you click on that, and it gives you a Google spreadsheet with live updating pricing of all the different securities, whether they're up or down. And this is not an offer to buy or sell any security. John C. Dvorak, myself, or Horowitz Company clients may have holdings in this that will be duly noted. Things are going along pretty well here. We had a couple of things stop out. We had El Pollo Loco. It's up 6.5% today, but still stopped out up 5.3% on that short. Anheuser-Busch still chugging along, up 8%. DaVita, your your stock there that also Warren Buffett loves and has a big piece of. They're the dialysis company, up 12.5%. Acorn, up 62%.
Yeah, it's the winner on
keeps
the chart.
Keeps on rolling that stock. Bank of California, up 10%. TransDigm, those are yours, 9%. Zodius, which is a animal medical, and there's no M&A activity going on there, but Animal Med is up 12%. Pandora, your short, finally kicking it, up 23%. Twitter short, up 17%. AT&T on the buy side by you is not doing so well, down 5%. Dick's Sporting Goods, just doing nothing. American Assets Trust, up 11%, which is awesome for what that is. China Recycling, I don't know why it's not getting more of a kick here, but up 4%. KB Homes, which was kind of never took off there on the short side, down 6%. Janus Capital, up 2%. Excuse me, up 0.2%. That was the decision to go short that when
yeah, that was doing better than it's doing now.
Yep. Got to look at that a little bit closer. GoPro.
The next one, wow.
GoPro up 25%. That's your pick. Big valuation problems.
Yeah, that's still within the month.
Yep. That was when? Oh, that was this month, yeah. That's pretty good. Apple, I shorted, down 9%. Not a good short. Ambarella, down 1% on the long side. Monster Beverage, down a little bit. FLIR Systems, I told you about the thermal imaging. They actually came out with earnings the day after, or 2 days after we talked about it.
Yeah, that was a good one.
Up 9%. See, your IBM is flat. It's only...
yeah, nothing. It's a dead money.
Terrible. I don't get it. Should be down in the 120s by now. Walgreens up 4% or 3.8% from when you picked it last week. And I have a pick after earnings. Missed pretty badly. Very overpriced. It probably needs to get retraced to the bottom. Panera Bread.
Your favorite.
Yeah.
I'm waiting for Crocs to come back on the
list. Crocs had a bad earnings number again. Crocs is down. You see that stock. It's down in the hole.
Crocs.
Ugly. I got a pair of Crocs recently that looked like Sperry's. You know, Docksiders?
Yeah.
Very comfortable. Very comfortable. What do you got? You got something?
Yeah, I got a couple things.
Okay.
I'm going to reiterate the IB or the Apple short.
Oh. You're going to definitely be ahead of me no matter what happens here. That's a good play.
I think it's finally the point to short it.
Okay.
And then I looked at a couple other things. I just might as well put another one on here. Let me go back to my list of ideas. This one here. Hold on a second. I just was looking at the chart and I said, oh, this is kind of interesting. AGTC. I think it's the right sort of business. It's Applied Genetic Technologies. I like the chart.
AGCT.
Okay. AGTC.
Oh, TC.
A alpha gamma tetracarbonite. Tetrachloride. Alpha gamma tetrachloride. AGTC.
They received an award just a couple days ago.
Yeah, they haven't made any money, but it's kind of nice.
What do they
nice.
Do? I like genetics, gene therapy. You know, tackling eye disease. Oh, that's cool. Maybe they'll do the macular degeneration or something.
Yeah, it's always a winner.
Okay, got it. I like it. Yep, stock does look like it could break out here. I agree with you.
Yeah, it could be. And I looked at some other things, and this is the only one that really interests me. I was looking at, I was thinking it might be an interesting quick short is Madison Square Garden, but.
Well, they're thinking about doing some kind of breakup or some something.
Yeah, that could actually take off like a rocket. It's too risky.
Yep.
But
let me put this one on here.
I think that'll be it. Just those guys.
Wait, what happened to our rocket company?
Oh yeah,
what is it? ORB, right? Was that the symbol?
I think we'll wait till the next week.
Yeah, ORB was a symbol. That probably
ORB. Yeah, I mean, it looks like it might be a good. It's a good. I don't know. I'm not as comfortable with that as I am with even shorting Apple.
Yeah, Apple's right now it's loved. Doesn't stay like that forever, but it's definitely loved right now.
Well, I think because this annual report that came out with all this kind of the one thing in the annual report that got to me the most.
Yeah.
Is the flat sales at the stores.
Yeah.
I've always said as a kind of just a philosophy, because Apple's got to be shorted someday because it can't be the world's biggest company forever. Because it's a fad. It's based on fads and fanboys and the Apple people. Right. They do good work. There's no question about the product. but it's too big. It's overpriced. And my thinking was always that when they close their first store, they shutter a store, that's when you short the company.
Interesting.
Because the stores are kind of the...
It's a bread and butter.
Yeah, they make all their money through the stores if you start analyzing it carefully. And now that the store sales went flat, I'm thinking this is now it's going to be interesting to watch what happens.
Well, we'll take a look at that. I'll also mention, for the heck of it, the KRI, the key reversal indicator, is at a +5. We haven't seen that since, I guess it was back in September of 2013. And that usually indicates a pretty fluffy market condition.
But that can change overnight. You saw the skittishness with the market because of the one lone gunman up in Canada. I mean, it doesn't look healthy. And the market reacts to that. I don't trust it.
Yeah. Anyway, we'll see you next week.
Okay.
And I'll talk to you then.
All right, bye.
All right, bye-bye.
You've been listening in on a conversation with John C. Dvorak and Andrew Horowitz. Hope to be with you again soon. Bye-bye.
Now, I'm not broke, but badly bent. I'm not down to my last cent, 'cause I got a dollar, but it's my last dollar bill. Yes, sir. In my pocket stands a dent. All my dough is nearly spent, but I got a dollar, and it's my last dollar bill. Oh, I'd love just one more buck fortune left me by chance. Now, here's a hint, I feel like a mint. You can hardly tell by a glance. I don't care, no millionaire can give me the icy stare, 'cause I got a dollar, my last dollar bill.